Fly-in season is here, so don't forget to fly the airplane. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. As is often the case on Mondays, my guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the Journal for the Proficient Pilot. We get together on Mondays to talk about safety-related issues. Bob, we appreciate your being here.
Good morning, Paul.
We are coming up on Sun and Fun. It's the week to go to Lakeland, and you, in your most recent issue of Over the Airwaves, wrote about something that befell someone who was at a major fly-in, which could be a very important lesson for anyone planning to fly to any of the big fly-ins with that season underway now. And it comes down to fly the airplane. Tell us a little bit about the accident that happened. I guess it was at Oshkosh, the one you wrote about that set this up.
Yes, this happened, Paul, back at AirVenture 2006. It was a fatal accident that coincidentally happened just immediately prior to our arrival at the airport on that day. And what it was a Europa XS. It's a little two-place, almost light sport aircraft. And he was on downwind, turning on base, and just short of the runway, responding to ATC issued instructions. According to witnesses, the airplane stalled, rolled, and then spun in short of the runway with two fatalities. And one has to wonder, you know, what would cause an airplane that is moving along properly in the traffic pattern, downwind, base to final, to all of a sudden lose it on a perfect weather day just short of the runway? Well, anybody who's gone into one of these major fly-ins or even a busy fly-in breakfast knows that the distractions from other aircraft, also in this particular case, constant communications with ATC and instructions to you to turn the airplane this way or that way can cause enough distractions for us to quite literally take our attention from flying the airplane to watching out the window and listening to ATC, which, of course, is a must-do activity, but we can't stop flying the airplane in the process of doing it. And I've occasionally wondered about the wisdom of ATC or a controller asking a pilot to rock his wings to acknowledge receipt of a transmission, particularly in a critical phase of flight. And we can only surmise what may have happened, but an individual turning on final is going low, is flying low, is flying slow, perhaps is in a fairly steep turn, fairly close to stall, and then receives an instruction from ATC, Europa XS, rock your wings. That could be just enough to cause a slightly disoriented pilot to do something with the airplane that is not recoverable.
Well, now, these fly-ins have been going on for a long time, and particularly in the case of Oshkosh, it's been years and years since they actually addressed anybody by N number. I mean, this white low-wing plane do such and such has been, you know, that's been the mode in which they operate for a long time now. Would this not occur to someone that this was a possibility?
No, that's the only way sometimes you can communicate, because of the volume of traffic, and it's easier for the controllers to look at the airplane through a pair of binoculars and determine what it is and refer to it that way. There's nothing wrong with that, but I sometimes cringe when I see an airplane maneuvering low and slow and turning, and ATC says, low wing white aircraft, rock your wings. Well, Any reasonably proficient pilot can deal with that kind of a request. But if we have an airplane, or a pilot, I should say, that is not quite up to proficiency, is a little bit overtasked in the process, and then now has to do a bit of an airplane maneuver like rock your wings at a critical phase of flight, conceivably that could be a problem. Now, in this particular instance, I don't think it certainly was not revealed in the NTSB a probable cause report that he was distracted by the controller. At least that information wasn't shown in the report, so we can only surmise. I think the point is, if ATC says rock your wings and you're in a tight turn and flying low and slow, gracefully ignore the ATC instructions and fly the airplane first. Of course, that old adage, aviate, navigate, and communicate, rule supreme here, and we must not forget that, particularly now that Sun and Fun is coming up and the summer fly-in season is coming up. Fly the airplane first. It makes only makes common sense, but sometimes we have to remind ourselves of that.
Well, let's step back, Bob, and talk about people who are going to these events and maybe some things. There are several things, obviously, in any accident. There's a chain. A couple of things occur to me in this case. If you're going to fly into one of those major fly-ins and you have any question about whether you are on the razor's edge of proficiency, there's a couple of different things you can do. You could fly in early. You could fly in at an off-peak time. What are some other ways to avoid getting around this mad rush that happens at certain peak periods?
Well, the point you made is excellent. You know, try to determine what the peak time is and do come in early and leave before the crowd leaves. I think another one is, by all means, bring along a qualified safety pilot. Now, bringing along your spouse, a child, I mean, that's okay to look out the window, but having a proficient pilot in the right seat, one to watch for traffic, perhaps even to do the communicating, and then the other pilot dedicating himself or herself exclusively to flying the airplane, that's another solution. I think also just proficiency. Get out and fly often. One of the things that we desperately do not want to do is inhibit or discourage fly-ins to these fly-ins. We want people there. We want to be able to enjoy that. We should not be intimidated by that, but we really do need to be more proficient than many of the pilots that find themselves there with some rusty skills.
Well, it's especially in April, Bob, there are going to be some rusty pilots flying in. We know that, especially if they come from a cold-weather climate.
No question.
I have to point out that no matter whether you're coming to Lakeland or whether you're going to Oshkosh, it is really not difficult to find someone who would like to be in that right seat with you.
Standing room only. That's right. Bring along somebody to be watching out the window and have the more proficient pilot on the controls.
All right, I want to talk in a moment with Bob when we come back from the break about an accident where we do not have cause information yet from the NTSB, but it's one of those situations where I think there's value in discussing what could have happened because it's still a valuable lesson, and that's the crash that grounded, finally, Kemper Aviation in Florida a few weeks ago. Bob Miller is my guest. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Platt, and we're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack, talking with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the Journal for the Proficient Pilot. Bob joins us each Monday to talk about safety-related issues. Bob, this accident back in March at Kemper Aviation in Florida, this is a flight school, a very large, very active flight school based in at Lantana Airport. Jeff Rozelle was a partner in the school. He was an ATP. He was out flying three researchers from a university doing a migratory bird study. And witnesses said they were flying low over some cow fields. He must have hit stall. From what we can tell, all four aboard were lost. The interesting things about this from the NTSB preliminary report looks to me like a lot of factors put together that made a stall spin type accident very likely. And that includes the fact that the airplane, if you add up the weight of the passengers and 56 gallons of fuel, he was probably running a little bit overweight. And the reason I wanted to talk about this accident is I know there's probably a tendency by the general media to seize on this fact that he might have been a couple hundred pounds overweight and say, well, obviously that's what happened. Flying 200 pounds overweight is far from the worst thing you could do in that aircraft. There was probably a factor in some other things that went wrong. The NTSB found that when the plane went down, it had 14 degrees of flaps dialed in, and witnesses said he was flying low and slow. Obviously, he was probably accommodating the needs of these migratory bird researchers to get a good look at what was on the ground. To me, I think if you add up being at gross or even slightly over, flying with 14 degrees of flaps, he was probably trying to make the thing as slow as he possibly could, and being at 250 feet AGL, altogether, that to me spells right on the very edge of things we have to be careful of.
Well, Paul, you're very perceptive on this. The individual flying at that low altitude, flaps dialed in, he's flying probably right at the critical angle of attack, which could result in easily result in a stall situation. What we sometimes lose sight of is the fact that our experience in stalls, particularly in the flight training arena, is almost universally taken from a wings level attitude. In other words, the student or the pilot is instructed to slow the airplane, dirty it up, lower the flaps, raise the nose, and wait, and cut the power, or wait for a stall. And we customarily feel that stall break someplace around 36, 39 knots in a traditional four-seat trainer like a 172. Where we fall short in our training environment is try that same maneuver in a 60-degree bank. And in a 60-degree bank, of course, our stall speed increases rather dramatically. If we look at the chart, we see that a 60-degree bank produces a load factor of 2. If you crank some numbers, our stall speed increases by a factor of 1.4. Now, how does this relate to the accident that you're describing? Let's just presume, although we don't know from the NTSB report, and I don't think I've seen witness statements on it just yet in detail, but let's just presume that he is close to his stall speed, close to the critical angle of attack, and now he rolls the airplane into maybe a 45-degree bank. And that 45-degree bank or even a 60-degree bank could be just enough of an additional load factor to increase his stall speed beyond the straight and level stall speed. And then, boom, faster than he can possibly recover the airplane. Now one wing drops out, the stall has occurred, and he's in a nose-down spiral or spin, and close to the ground, that's going to be fatal. So the lesson learned in this is whenever maneuvering slow, keep in mind that maneuvering slow in a bank condition as opposed to a straight and level condition is markedly different.
Well, and, you know, even if you're going to make a 30-degree bank turn, if you're close enough to the edge, that could be enough to do it. I mean, a fairly gentle turn might be all it takes.
Yeah, it does. It doesn't take much. Now, I use a technique in flight instruction that some of my colleagues fight with me over the aerodynamic principles involved. But for a primary student, it really, at that level, they're not going to understand it anyway. So I just routinely say to my students, I want no turns in the traffic pattern below 70 knots.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once you dissect that speed, you will see at 70 knots, the angle of attack is so low that if the student inadvertently gets into a steep bank or a yawed condition, he's still so far below the critical angle of attack that the airplane will not stall. And I think that's a helpful technique for us flight instructors, in fact, for all pilots, whenever maneuvering in the traffic pattern down low to the ground. Keep the airspeed up to 70 knots in the turns. That'll keep your angle of attack low enough that nothing bad will happen.
All right. Obviously, after you turn base to final, you'll want to have set yourself up on a little longer final if you're doing that than you might at a lower speed.
Yeah. Yes. In the turn from base to final, I often try to get the student to do it at a half standard rate, and at a half standard rate, the problem is not nearly as severe. But yes, you need to allow yourself enough time on the final to get the airplane slowed down. But you know, when making that final turn at 70 knots, pitch the nose up slightly, your flaps are in, the airplane's going to slow very, very quickly to a nice, comfortable 65 knots over the numbers.
I want to make it clear here, Bob, before we leave, that I'm not trying to tell our listeners that we have definitive answers in this crash that happened in Florida. But sometimes I think, out of respect for waiting for the official results to come out, we don't talk about possible causes. And really, when these accidents are on people's minds, I think is a good time to talk about some of the what-ifs, even if it's not exactly what happened, because there's still a lesson there for everybody.
I have a lead-in quotation, as I do on each Over the Airwaves, and I sometimes get criticized by my readers for delving too much into the negative sides of aviation, the accident reporting and whatnot. And this quote by James Russell Lowell says a lot to us as pilots. It says, quote, mishaps are like knives that either serve us or cut us as we grasp them by the blade or by the handle. And this accident that you're referring to, and of course we don't have the final report yet, but if we grab that accident by the handle and just try to glean something from it, as you said, the what-if analysis, is there something in just the basic description of that event that we can learn from? And this one is a classic. Low-level maneuvering is something that gets more pilots, I think, than any other phase of flight. And we also still have, unfortunately, one fatal stall spin accident a week in the United States. It's over 50 a year. So there's enough of them out there for us all to take note.
Well, Bob, as always, we appreciate your expertise and input. We'd encourage our readers to visit overtheairwaves.com to read your latest month's writings. And we'll talk to you again after Sun and Fun.
Thanks, Paul. See you next week.
You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.